The one useful piece of information that Dr. Romero did give us was that some children would substitute their fears of something insubstantial, something we grown-ups couldn't see, with something concrete, like a drain. I thought this was a very apt way of looking at the situation. The good doctor gave us a little reverse psychology to try, so one night we tried it. We told Charlie that bath time was no longer any fun, and that he could never, ever have another bath in his life. Then Charles and I got in the bath together, something that we hadn't done since Charlie was born. We laughed and splashed and played in a grown-up fashion. Of course, the door was closed. But the enticing sounds from the bathroom just wouldn't draw Charlie to us. When we had finished our antics, we went to look for Charlie and found him sitting on the kitchen floor, crying. "Mommy! Mommy!" he squalled miserably. "The drain could get you!" The bath time terrors continued for about another 6 months. Charlie had once been a happy, bouncing baby, but now, even when he wasn't being threatened with a bath, he cried a lot and didn't sleep well at night. I was as easy on him as I could be, but Charles didn't believe in cosseting. He said his parents had never spoiled him, and he was damned if he was going to spoil any son of his. He left Charlie alone in the bath for minutes at a time, forbidding me to go to him when he cried. When Charles wasn't around, I tried to follow his example and didn't needlessly mollycoddle my son. I wanted to go to him whenever he screamed or cried, but I didn't. One night, I came to regret that very much. Charles was in New Orleans for a national swimming competition. Liana and Luis had gone home for the night. That lurking hush had pervaded the house, so I had the CD player on, and songs from Sesame Street were playing. The happy music seemed to dispel that eerie presence, at least temporarily. And Charlie was happy for the first time in a long time. I fed him his favorite supper, mac and cheese and peach cobbler. I read him a Raggedy Ann story, and by the time I wanted to give him a bath, he was quite docile, giving me sticky, peachy kisses and hugs. He started up his mewling cry when it came time for bath, but when I got in and played with him, the crying stopped. We had a lovely time splashing away and spraying each other with water. When I heard a bang and a crash from down cellar, and got out of the water to see what was going on, Charlie was too distracted with his toys to mind my absence, at least for the moment. I threw a towel around myself and rushed to see what the matter was. One of the wooden shelves on which Liana kept jars of jams and preserves had collapsed, and chunks of glass to which sticky messes of jam clung were littering the floor. I got the mop and bucket and was just beginning to clean up when I heard the most terrible shriek coming from upstairs. It was long and loud. It sounded like someone was being tortured with sharp instruments. At first, I made up my mind not to go to him. I thought of what Charles had told me. But when the shrieking didn't stop, glass and sticky jam were all forgotten, and I rushed up to Charlie. I found him standing up in the bathtub, shaking with paroxysms of terror. The strange thing about it was that the plug was sitting in the bottom of the tub, and the water was trickling down the drain. Now, the ring had broken off our bathtub plug sometime before this, so only someone with long fingernails could pull it out. Charlie couldn't have done it with his short baby's nails. "Charlie, honey!" I cried, and ran to the bathtub to sweep him into my arms and hug him. I fell over the squeaky rubber chicken that was lying on the floor and sprawled full length on the bath mat. As I tried to get to my feet, Charlie stood in the bathtub screaming incoherently about the drain. I remember vaguely thinking that he was going to scream himself to death. But as I got to my feet, the screaming stopped. "Mommy!" he cried hoarsely, looking directly at me with eyes that were slowly beginning to lose their glazed look. "Mommy, don't go near it! It's bad! Very bad! Very!" At that moment, he collapsed into the bottom of the bathtub, striking his head as he did so. I picked him up, cuddling him and kissing him and crying, but he didn't make a sound. He didn't breathe. I felt for a pulse, and there wasn't one. I thought maybe the blow on the back of his head had killed him. But after the doctors had poked and prodded his poor dead body, they told me he must have died of sudden infant death syndrome. I know now that he scared himself to death. He had one lucid moment before his heart stopped, and then, "Doctor, do you have any tissues?" "Thank you. That's better." I can't talk about that anymore. I was never blamed for what happened. Other than the slight wound to the back of the head, there was nothing to show that I had pushed Charlie. So the doctors put it down to SIDS, even though I didn't believe it. When Charles heard about it, he was extremely contrite about the way he'd behaved. He tried to make it up to me. "We'll have another one," he said, as if I thought that another child could replace my dearest Charlie. He bought me furs and jewels and took me out to parties, but I couldn't stop grieving. He did give me another one, though. That was Bernie, who was named after me. She was born in May, almost 4 years after Charlie. I was always told that she looked a lot like me, too. I tried not to love her because I somehow always felt she was trying to replace her dead brother in my affections. But she was so good and sweet and pretty that I couldn't help loving her. She was docile as a lamb and so delicate and helpless. She liked baths at first, too, even in the big tub. But one day, when I went to get fresh towels out of the linen cupboard, Bernie began to shriek in the same terror-filled voice Charlie had used. She was too small to have pulled out the plug, but there it was, out of the drain hole. "Bad!" Bernie cried shrilly. "Bad! Bad!" Unlike Charlie at that age, Bernie didn't have as many words. All she could do when I asked her what was wrong was scream, "Bad! Bad! Bad! No!" Again, bath time was a chore. I guess the drain had had a taste of helpless little child and wanted more. Why do I say that? I don't know. I mean, the drain didn't kill her, after all. "Yes, I can see why you would say that, Doctor, but no, I'm not substituting something insubstantial for the fact that I managed to kill my children. Maybe I didn't realize what I was doing, you say? Maybe it was a mental lapse? I have freely admitted to you that I tried my best not to love Bernie. I've put all my cards on the table. But I did love Bernie, and I would never have wanted to kill her. Something did, though, and it succeeded.